We've got to awesome sponsors, including pizza now. And complete ag resolutions in case your tractor hits a cow. It's the TagCast podcast.
Wait.
Today's episode is brought to you by Tie-Dye Booties. Homemade hippie slippers with patchouli odor eaters. The more you sweat, the more smell you get.
Or smell.
Fuck that one up.
Hello.
Hi.
And welcome to the TagCast podcast. Episode 27. I'm your host, Getch, across the table. Your other host,
Terry, Kyle. We have a man down yesterday.
Man down.
Jeff Hanna, man down.
Yep, I was just thinking that.
Damn it.
I know.
So, yeah, Jeff Hanneman from Slayer passed away yesterday of liver failure, possibly complications of his spider bite.
And drinking.
And probably drinking, yes. Mm-hmm. 30 years of hard drinking.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? I don't know. I know Jeff liked to drink. Never met the man myself, but...
I don't know much about Jeff, the man, the Hanneman.
He was kind of the quiet one. He was like the George Harrison of Slayer.
All right, all right. That's the way he kind of seemed, because, you know, you always heard... Tom Araya's name thrown out.
Yeah, he was like the Paul McCartney of Slayer.
And then, you know, Kerry King, of course,
the songwriter,
always...
The John Lennon.
All right, he was the songwriter. And so what was,
well,
what was Jeff's role?
Jeff wrote a lot of songs, and they shared a lot over the
Lennon
first
McCartney.
10 years. Yeah, basically. Sometimes one of them would write, but they didn't have that deal like the Beatles did where every song was just... Hanneman King.
Yeah.
Whether one of them, you know, they wrote their own separate songs. But then on the last few albums, majority of the songs written by Kerry King, even before Jeff got bitten by the spider. So I don't know if he was like just not interested in it or didn't have time, or if Kerry was just a go-getter and they're like, I got 12 songs, let's make an album, man.
So they were one of those bands that did a lot of writing on their own and then would get together in the studio and then, you know, collaborate on them. All right.
A lot of times, like, the lyrics would be written by someone, and maybe the whole song musically was written by Jeff Hanneman, lyrics by Kerry King, but...
Sometimes you hear about those bands that go in the studio, you know, it's usually when they can rent a studio for, like, a month.
Right.
And they just come in dry, and then... And,
write,
you know,
a bunch of songs?
Yeah.
That'd be hard, man.
It would be, but if you had a month's time, I mean, you know, you're pretty much hanging out there getting food sent to you.
Yeah.
That would be the life. Of course, you'd have, you know, that's the kind of fronting that you end eventually have to pay back.
Yeah. Can't front on that shit.
Yeah. So, and I'm going to get some metal points down here, but they did a lot of switching of solos. They both did quite a bit of soloing, right?
Very,
so, it wasn't like a rhythm lead.
Almost every song was a trade-off, kind of like Iron Maiden or Judas Priest. Mm-hmm. Where, and then it was funny because even on the, I don't know if they did it on the later albums, but on the earlier albums, it would have all the lyrics. And then when the solo came, it would say, lead, King, Hanneman, King, Hanneman, King, Hanneman.
Oh, wow.
Because they would switch back and forth.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes Kerry King would do a solo on a solo break, and then Jeff Hanneman would do the solo at the end of the song, or vice versa.
Uh-huh.
If they didn't trade off, there were some songs where it probably just had a solo by one or the other.
They like to give each other their little... take on a solo part of a song.
Yeah, there was a lot of songs in the early Slayer career where they would go at least four or five solos back and forth. Just quick,
like
little...
a battle.
Yeah.
Like they're battling, like a rap battle.
Kind of like...
When you go in, you're just like...
Slayer solo battle.
Mama so fat, da-da-da-da-dee. And then the guy raps back an insult, and, you know.
Yeah.
They were blasting each other with their solos.
That's right. Shut you down with this solo. What you got, Kerry King?
Like on... The Book of Todd.
Oh, yeah.
When he made him bleed out his ass.
Yeah, that was that.
Oh, man, help, I'm bleeding out my ass.
Oh. So, yeah. I guess we'll do it.
All right,
that
so
faded out
what
quickly.
Do you think...
Quick moment of silence there.
What do you think that means for the rest of Slayer? I mean, you know, there was a little bit of tension, not so much with Hanneman involved, but with the Tom Araya and Kerry King, right?
There was more between Dave and Kerry, I thought. Tom Araya kind of stepped out of it.
Oh, that's right, right. Yeah. He helped Dave, and then he kind of disappeared out of the equation.
Yeah, he's like, wait, well, Kerry's pissed, so I'm not good. I don't care.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe taking the after the tour, let's worry about it. It was what I hoped that was going on.
Yeah, and I don't know what their status is as far as Dave Lombardo. If he's got a new band called Film, with P-H-I-L-M. I'm not even sure if it's like heavy metal or if it's just hard rock metal or what it is, but I know he's doing that and they're playing some tour dates and stuff, so I don't know if it's going to, I don't know what they're going to do with their
German situation.
It's
weird when people split off and do a side project and then there's some basic name that you would think would be taken.
Yeah, Film.
Yeah.
With a P-H.
Mm-hmm.
And his other band was Grip Incorporated, which is just weird.
What was the one? Fight.
Oh, with Rob Halford.
Yeah, that one was like, I can't believe that's not taken.
It probably was. And then they're like, I'm Rob Halford, so I'm signed on a label, so you guys just quiet down over there.
This is going to add to the May 2nd historical music. I was reading some May 2nd notes. I think it's ForksterRocks.com. Did you know this was, I do believe this yesterday was the day that Nirvana began a recording, Nevermind.
Really?
And
1 year
from that date, I don't know, I could be wrong.
Okay.
But I also read on the same May 2nd thing that a year later, after Nevermind was released, some UK band sued them.
Oh, Nirvana.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And they were been using it like 60 from 68, and it was settled out of court.
But they hadn't recorded anything for years, I think.
No,
they
but they won. They won the lawsuit, and it was settled out of court.
Yeah, they paid them. It was never released, I don't think, how much they ended up paying them.
But I don't think I'd ever really... I might have heard that back in the day, and I was like, yeah, okay, but never really... I probably forgot about it.
They wanted to change their name by adding like a number on the end of it, like Nirvana 2000 or something stupid. Or
yeah.
And back in the 90s, that was like futuristic.
Nirvana 0.0.
It's like, I met this guy in the year 2000. It just sounds like, wow, that was way in the future, right?
Yeah. No, I think Conan 13. And Andy Richter still do that bit.
In the year 2000.
Yeah. Can you
they just go back?
Yeah. You remember when that bit was like pre-2000, right?
It was like 98, 99.
Yeah, and now it's 2013. Yeah.
In the year 2020.
Yeah, it's like 13 years past whenever we were speculating that.
So it's more like a history lesson. In the
it
year
is.
2000, what happened? Let's
they
see.
Should just say facts from what happened in 2000.
Yeah, this was hot. The phrase word was getting really big again for the third time.
It was. And Linkin Park.
Ooh, yeah.
Was hitting the waves. No, they were before that, actually, I think. That whole kind of was late 90s stuff, wasn't it? Like Limp Bizkit and Linkin Park.
I think so.
And then, now those bands have been around for 20 years or so.
Yeah. And now they're like classic rock, which is just great.
They are. You hear them in the grocery store. Cookies. What? Cookies. What?
What?
Cookie aisle.
Oh, no.
Do you have a preference? Who was your, did you prefer Kerry King or Jeff Hanneman as far as like guitar work? Was there one that was more influential to you than the other?
I think I always kind of preferred Jeff Hanneman because he was more, I don't know, he did more kind of blues-based scales, even though they were super fast. He was more in like a pentatonic scale.
Uh-huh.
And Kerry King was just kind of like a flailer, like a noodler.
He did a lot of the...
A lot of dive. Well, they both like to do a lot of dive bombing. That was part of Slayer's sound. But Kerry King earlier was kind of just a... play as many notes as you can fast with a couple...
Yeah, well, it was all about showing how fast you could play back then, right?
Because
you wanted to be speed... You know, that was the... It was the early days of speed metal, right?
Yeah, and then when Seasons in the Abyss came out, there was kind of a noticeable difference because, like I said, in the lyrics, they would tell, this is this guy doing this solo. So you could listen to their style and actually go, oh, that's him. Oh, this is what he sounds like. Jeff Hanneman had a little bit more of a fuller, like a warmer, kind of a bluesy sound to his leads, and Carrie's was a little more tinny and just like,
ah. Yeah.
But then a Seasons of the Abyss, he was like, I could notice that he was like, noticeably better at like his scales and doing things that were actually musical rather than just hitting as many notes as he could.
Yeah.
So I think, and then I looked into it, I think, and that was late 80s, 89 or somewhere around there. I think he actually took some guitar lessons. I don't know if that's
just
true or not.
Some scales, yeah, or, you know, some things that.
And of course, playing every night on tour is going to help you, and practicing, learning songs, you just get better. But he seemed to be the more focal point of the band as far as the guitar players. He was on the Beastie Boys thing. He was in Megadeth for a minute.
Probably more sociable, right?
I guess.
And reaching out and making the connections where, you know, it almost seems like Jeff, as you said earlier, was kind of the quiet guy.
Yeah, he was kind of a brown recluse. Which I think is actually what bit him, but I'm not 100% positive. That's what Carl said on the radio yesterday.
Yeah.
And I'd heard different stuff, but who knows?
So is there bands from that era that are kind of dismissed as cheesy because of maybe the vocals or the musical stylings, but have like incredible shred guitarists?
I think there's a lot of them, and a lot of people enjoy that kind of vocals, as far as I think that's what's the cheese factor of it is. And maybe not, I don't know. I used to really love a lot of those high singing groups like in the early 80s. Iron Maiden, even when Queensryche first came out, I was like, fuck, these guys are badass.
Yeah.
But now, I don't really care a lot for the super high vocals, but
I don't mind it if it's used sparingly and in a way that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, when it's just high vocals for high vocal sake, no.
And maybe that's just their style. I've always thought about it. How did the singer for, how did King Diamond decide that that's how I sing? That's super high. Like, he does some low.
He's just picking a style and going and
I guess, you know, and that's what I want.
Sticking to the bit.
Yeah. Don't break character.
Yeah.
And don't break the oath. That was the first album by, maybe not the first album, but an early Merciful Fate album. Yeah. Don't break the oath and don't break character, King.
Yeah, because it seems like, you know, if I look up like a lot of the shredder masters from back in those days, some of those bands are kind of made fun of today.
Oh, yeah.
I can't think of any on the top of my head.
You know what I was realizing? I was watching some Metalocalypse from season one on Netflix the other day, and they had the first Dr. Roxo, the rock and roll clown on Metalocalypse, Death Clock. You know that guy? I do cocaine. And so then they showed this backstory on Dr. Roxo, and they showed his band. And the song comes on, and it's just totally, you can tell they're trying to make fun of Van Halen. Just the way he's picking with his fingers and picking two notes. It sounded like Panama or something, like... You know, when you hear a song that's like molded
random
after a
song.
Yeah, and you're hearing it, and then like
random
he's singing.
And
he's totally making fun of David Lee Roth. Like, just, I can't even do it, but it's fucking hilarious. And I think that it's funny when people poke fun at those bands. And
nobody can do David Lee Roth, though.
No,
right?
But, I didn't even notice. I thought he was kind of sounding like Lemmy from Motorhead. And then Farmer Tape Nose pointed out, he's like, he's making fun of David Lee Roth. And I go, well, that guitar sounds exactly like Van Halen. And then I listened again, I was like, he is, but it was so, like, exaggerated that if you weren't looking for it, you didn't notice that he was.
Dude, he was one of the most unique frontmen of the history of rock and roll, right?
Yeah, I
mean,
I think
so. He jumped everywhere.
Touched his toes.
Yep, he dressed in
flamboyant.
Yeah, usually
feathers,
white.
Yeah, spandex.
And a stage show. He was always into, like, you know, well, in a solo, he brought it out more, probably because it wasn't so much Van Halen, but he brought, like, the whole Vegas kind of feel and stage presence.
That's kind of what he turned into when he started his solo career, doing, like, California Girls and Just a Gigolo and those songs. Like, it reminded me of, like, a...
And what was
rocker.
That one that Steve Vai was on? Wasn't that who played with him on that
album? Yeah, that first album.
Yankee Rose.
Yeah. Was it the Skyscraper?
Yeah.
Yeah. Eat 'em and Smile, I think he was on that as well.
Mm-hmm.
First couple albums, Steve Vai and Billy Sheehan on the bass. Had a great album, Greg Bissonette.
Yeah.
Great music group.
I like that. So, I mean, you know, those are some great songs from the 80s, right?
And they have a little bit of a Van Halen feel to them with the yeah. style of double bass that they're doing on, like, Shy Boy
and
stuff like that.
And the guitar shenanigans.
Yeah. And, but he, you know, I guess Vai had his own style.
Oh, for sure.
Away
but
from
it was
Van
still
Halen.
Like a guitar virtuoso level where,
yep.
and, you know, a signature sound.
Yeah.
I was just watching yesterday a video of, what the heck is that guy's name? Yngwie.
Oh, yeah.
Yngwie
Malmsteen.
He was talking about an album that I think it already came out by now. And he was talking about the stuff that inspired him. Part of me is wishing I remembered any more of this story. But no, he just came out with a memoir.
Oh.
And so I don't know if
memoir.
You're much of a Yngwie fan, more than just, you know, the name of Yngwie.
Yeah.
He started playing when he was like 5.
Yeah, he was classically trained, too, and mm-hmm. just...
I don't think he never took lessons, he said, in guitar, but he took, like, lessons in piano and drums and...
Music lessons.
Yeah, from a very, very early age.
That's kind of what I did. I didn't turn out like Yngwie, but I took piano lessons and stuff, and then once I started playing the guitar, I was like, I don't want lessons, I just want to play.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to show me something, show me how to play a song. Don't teach me a scale, because mm-hmm. that's fucking boring.
And he very, very was adamant about ear. You know, just
playing by ear.
If it sounds good to you, it's good. If it doesn't, then it's probably not good.
Yeah.
A good song and you know, trust in the ear and stuff, which I've always had trouble with. I'm not ear trained at all.
Well, you're more be playing by ear. Rather than playing by ears.
Yeah, yeah.
Because you only got one good one.
But, huh? You know, on the other side, I never really put, like, a total focus into, like, being able to sit down and have the patience to try to learn somebody's song just by listening to it.
Yeah.
You know, because it would take me so long that I might as well just jam.
Yeah.
And have fun.
Just jam it.
You know, but yeah, I like doing some of the simpler songs I used to back in the performing in front of the bookstore days.
Yeah.
Like the Joe's Garage chords and some songs like that. Maybe a couple Skinnered by the Chord songs.
Right.
You know, the fake booking. Is that what it is?
That was before Facebook, right?
Yeah.
Fake book.
Yeah.
That's
which took me a while to figure out what fake books were. I was like, what is song fake book?
I don't know what that is. I'm not familiar with that term.
It's just, I think it's a simplified kind of tablature where I don't even know if it's tablature.
It's just giving you chord progressions and the melody.
It's just giving you chords and not even like, I don't even, the correct formations of the chords. It's just
I've had
like,
those books.
This
and we
is
had
a G, and this is an A, and this is a D.
We had those books, but I'd never heard them called fake books. But yeah, so it'd be like written out like a piece of music.
Yeah.
And it would say.
But it doesn't transpose. If
right.
It's transposed.
It's just
or
got the chord, like where the chord changes, and it'll show basically those little chord charts. It's like tablature.
Mm-hmm.
That shows you where to put your fingers. G. And then you switch to D when you say this word, and it's got the lyrics down below, and then a melody line for the lyrics. But you're not playing the melody line. So, yeah, you're just kind of strumming chords. G.
Yeah, the simple, yeah.
And that's
it could
how
be
my,
like a G minor to a D6, but it's just saying G, D.
Yeah, and that's how my dad learned how to play a lot of songs, and now that's what he does to any time he tries to play a song that's mm-hmm. another person's song. He'll just hit the root chords and play it however he wants to play it. And I was like, well, it kind of goes like that, but it goes mm-hmm. like this, and I'll play some stuff for him. He'll go, whoa, well, that sounds like a really, like it's supposed to sound. I was like, well, yeah, that's, the book doesn't tell you all that stuff. It's just telling you go to G and then mm-hmm. D. And then
but it really makes it great for like, you know, campfire singing.
Oh,
and,
for sure. Yeah.
And, being able to jam along with somebody who can play those songs.
Yeah, because a lot of times you might know how to play the song, but you don't know what the actual chord progression mm-hmm. would be if you tried to simplify it. So
yeah.
Ooh, that was a good one.
Do you think is a useful step for somebody learning how to play to use those, or should they just go ahead and wait to learn the chords before they attempt a song like that?
I think it depends on what they want to do. Like, if they're wanting to learn a bunch of songs so they can be like a singer, guitarist that can like play coffee houses and stuff, I think it'd be better to learn the simple versions, and then you could embellish those chord progressions yourself.
Make it your own.
Exactly. But if you want to be like a musician's musician, I think it'd be better to learn all the chords, learn all your scales, learn theory and all that stuff.
And then how they relate to each other.
And then you turn into
Ingrae Malmsteen.
If you have the ability, then you're just like, you're off the hook.
There are some things like the circle of fifths. Once you learn that it's kind of, you know,
it helps. Yeah, for
tremendously
songwriting.
For songwriting.
Yep, that's when you notice that most of the songs that the Beatles wrote were based around that, and at least all their number one songs. So there is kind of a formula to writing a song that sounds pleasant to.
There is,
the layman's ear.
There, some bands, they go straight for that formula. Weezer's another one. You know, a lot of their songs are very formulaic, and he went to. After their first album, he went to school for
music.
Yeah.
But that didn't change their style, though, right?
No, but, you know, it helped him in songwriting and stuff like that. And, you know, it was more probably just something to do, you know? I mean, because after the first album, they had shit tons of money.
Yeah. Yep. Shit tons
bastards.
Of money. Fuckers.
Buddy Holly. Ooh.
The sweater.
All those middle school girls
the
loving
it. The sweater song.
Yep.
Yeah.
In the garage.
So catchy, though.
It is, because they were very formulaic songs.
They were written to please other people's ears. Well, you know, I can't say that 100% because I don't know those guys. That might be their passion, and that might be what they love. But
well,
a lot of bands you know. He liked
knack
metal.
And he had a knack for natural songwriting, I think, and that helped him out. And
a lot of people are like, I'm going to write this song.
He was very into metal.
I don't know what band he was playing in, but I saw some early pictures of him, and he had long hair, and he was wearing
like hair metal guy.
He was wearing white and black striped spandex pants, and like, it's like
weird when you see those guys from like signature bands, like even Pantera, and then you see pictures of what they were before, and you're like, they were just jumping, trying to hit the trend.
Yeah, what's going on right now?
And then this is the trend that happened to shoot for him, and you know, I mean.
And that's what I wonder, if that's their true love or if that's just what worked out for them, so that's what they stuck with.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Because they did change a little after they hit the big time with Cowboys from Hell. It was still more southern.
And then when they focused on that, their second album.
They went a little heavier.
Yeah.
But still like to do occasional little ballad or two.
This Love.
Yeah. And like Cemetery Gates, which was on Cowboys from Hell. But
yeah. That was a pretty badass song, though.
Cemetery Gates?
Yeah.
Yeah. And at the end, he'd do the really high. And that's kind of like you were talking about earlier, about high singing sparingly and in the right places, not just all the time.
Yeah.
And at the end, he's kind of like doing a battle with Dimebag, where he's going, wah! And then Dimebag's like, wah!
Yeah.
Can you go higher? Wah! He's like, higher, higher, higher.
Mm-hmm. And then you have Raven on the other end.
Oh.
Sometimes they're just goofy.
He sings high all the time. Yeah. Kind of like AC/DC a little bit.
I would have loved to have gone and seen those guys, though, when they came to Portland.
It was a very fucking energetic. They were running all around like crazy men.
Yeah.
I think I seen them like two or three times, but pretty small stages, Starry Night Club.
Now, what does you see a band like that likes to run around the stage, and then at what point do they start doing that? Because, like, when you're playing, you can't get that kind of practice if you're playing the Dixie.
Or if you're in your practice space.
Yeah.
What are you running?
Yeah, you have to, you know, at some point you have to, I don't know, I guess some people run out into the crowd at the Dixie.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't know. You just can't. I don't know where that comes into play.
You got to have a bigger stage, I think.
Yeah, or like for Guns N' Roses when they were doing it.
When you run from here down to the end of the cul-de-sac and you're still on the same fucking stage.
Yeah,
you're, like,
you're just climbing a speaker over
you're
there.
You're like, Slash!
Yeah.
Where is he? I think that's him. Oh, the top hat. Yeah, the guy in the top hat, way over there at the other side of the stage.
Yeah, or there are some bands that don't even like fill in the stage. You just have the drummer like way in the back, and then there's so much space.
Yeah.
Right in the front, you have three.
You got to run
people.
Like 20 steps just to get from the front of the stage back to the drummer.
But they don't. They just kind of hang out in there. You know, it's just like empty stage.
And what do you think about bands that have came to that stature, and that's all they do? You know, they say like Guns N' Roses or the Rolling Stones or whatever.
Rush.
They're just playing huge stages. And like Mick Jagger, he's running all around doing his fucking chicken walk. And Keith Richards is like staying in the same place the whole show, but he's got tons of room. And those guys, I don't know if you've ever seen pictures of them on a big stage. They got a really bare bones amplifier set up, like a couple little Tweed Fender amps for Keith Richards and just some mics.
Yeah, they just mic it rather than, you know. Well, a lot of stage shows that have the big old Marshalls.
They're not all hooked up.
Yeah, they're just a lot of just blank cabs with the front face.
Yeah.
And then they just mic the one because you don't.
I think Yngwie was the first person I saw in a magazine that had like 50 Marshall stacks.
Yeah.
And they all had a head. So there was 50 heads and 100 cabinets. And you can't daisy chain 100 cabinets.
What would be the point?
I don't know.
Especially if you're micing them.
Loudness.
It wasn't there. I don't know if this is just a rumor or just something I heard, but that Stevie Ray Vaughan he daisy chained like 12 Marshalls to record an album.
He might have.
Like
I didn't
in a small
that.
Little room that he just.
What would that do?
I don't know.
Wouldn't that blow up a speaker cabinet? You think 1,200?
Well, no. I think they all had their own stacks.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, I don't know what that would do. It almost it would. Wouldn't you have to go on low volume on all of them, or what?
You'd think.
You know, I mean, you could set the gain as high as you'd want on all of them.
It would be so loud it would be over-modulated on the microphone, you'd think, but.
Maybe I'll have to snoop that.
Yeah, snoop it. But like I was saying, you think a band that has reached that stature of playing on huge stages, do you think that they would, it would hinder their performance if they were stuck on a small little stage and didn't get to run around like they normally do? Like this recently happened just at the end of last month.
I don't know. I think they'd be excited for it if they didn't play it very often.
Yeah.
If they didn't have the chance to do that very often.
Like just at the end of last month in L.A., a handful of Rolling Stones fans got a rare treat when the band announced a last-minute show at an L.A. club for just $20 a ticket.
Wow.
Cash only.
Huh.
No credit cards. Rumors of the gig began circulating the Friday before the show, and people were in line before 1 a.m. Saturday morning at the El Rey Theater.
Oh, bet.
And the tickets were distributed by lottery, so everyone had the same chance regardless of whether...
Everybody in line got a lottery ticket, and then they drew names.
And so the person who was the first in line might not have gotten a ticket.
Yeah.
So the Saturday night show was part of their preparation for their upcoming 50 and Counting tour, which begins today at Staples Center in L.A., and the tickets for tonight's show, $250 for the cheap seats.
I believe it.
So this group of few hundred people got to see the Stones at a small club for $20.
I remember when it was a big deal, like they were old rockers when they were going out on their, what was that?
Steel Wheels?
Steel Wheels tour. It was like...
1983.
Really?
Yeah. 30 years ago. Yeah.
So that was like, what, the 30th anniversary.
You thought they were old then.
Yeah, no,
It would have been their 20-year anniversary because they started in 63.
Dude, it's crazy, man. I've talked about this before where, like, then, you know, from that point to the start of the Stones was 20 years, and 20 years from today is, like, the start of Nirvana.
Right.
Well, actually, they started 24 years.
Right.
Or 25 years ago.
88.
So there's more time from that than when we were listening to the Stones in 83. You know?
Right.
That's or the 30, Beatles, even, for that fact.
Yeah. That 30 years...
That music was newer to us then than Nirvana is to us now.
Yeah. And weird. It's fucking weird to think about. And it's also weird to think about another man down, and it was not Keith Richards. How did Jeff Hanneman fuck his liver up worse than fucking Keith Richards?
I don't know.
Dio?
Or Dylan.
Bob Dylan?
Yeah.
Was he a partier?
I don't know, but he's older than fuck.
Yeah, well, he's basically the same age as all those guys, all those Stones.
Apparently, he went in, he paid a small fee to go into John Lennon's a little tour of his childhood home unnoticed.
Unnoticed?
Yeah.
They just let him go by himself?
No, he paid. It's a general tour that they do.
Oh, okay. But he didn't go in as a star.
He did. Yeah, he just went in unnoticed, and he just kind of took the tour. And
it's like, hey, that looks pretty cool.
Yeah. I don't know what they mean by unnoticed. You know, like nobody recognized him or nobody just like made a big deal.
Yeah.
Because I've been in a room with John Lennon's artwork before.
I thought you were going to say with John Lennon.
Dude, and it's a weird, silent. It's weird, man.
It's weird and silent.
Yeah, it is. It's like a bunch of people in a room looking at all these paintings and stuff, and it's just completely silent.
Yeah.
Like 80 people in there.
I remember when that all happened, like, I don't know, was it mid-90s? When they were doing a lot of John Lennon art stuff, the artwork of John Lennon. I won a t-shirt from Kazo.
It was probably about 96, 97. Yeah.
Okay.
There was down at the Hilton in Eugene.
That must have been around the time, because we went to one of those morning KZL Sid and Mark things where mm-hmm. you go and hang out with them at Jamie's Hamburgers, and you do like a ring toss thing with a toilet, and you win prizes. And And I won a John Lennon t-shirt that just, it had a cool Earth on the back of it, and it had like his scribbly handwriting that said, imagine yeah. there's no people or something. And then on the front it had a little red square that said the artwork of John Lennon. It was cool. I think I might still have it, but...
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of his artwork. It's very simple,
like just
scribbly
line drawing.
It's almost like a caricature.
Yeah,
you know,
and at least his self-portrait of him, you could see that's John Lennon.
Yeah,
even though it's just scribbly hair and, mm-hmm. and the round glasses, and you're like, well, that's John Lennon.
Yeah, yeah,
because he kind
of a very defined art style
for sure,
and inspiring because it doesn't really look that hard.
Right, you're like, wait, I could do that.
Yeah.
It's like, wait a minute, that guy, he's got a whole art thing going on and...
short stories that don't make a fucking lick of sense.
How many, he had a bunch of short stories or just a few?
He wrote a couple books. I don't know beyond that how many short stories he had that were unpublished or whatever.
Huh.
But they're mostly just drawings and random stories. Almost, they're very nonsensical, like Steve Martin's writings. You know?
Just kind of blended thoughts. Whatever you're thinking, going through your mind.
Just kind of, fiction, weird characters, you know. I mean, like, Mean Mr. Mustard.
Right.
You know, you're talking about the guy with those kind of minds, right? Creating weird, twisted characters and putting them in odd situations. Like, he liked to fuck with.
Like the benefit of Mr. Kite.
Yeah.
Just weird fucking shit.
Yeah.
So, shit, what was I thinking? I was thinking something. Oh, it's Ron Popeil's birthday today, by the way.
Oh, nice. Ron Popeil. Ronco.
Yeah.
You own anything that Ron Popeil has ever shilled?
Maybe second-handedly, but I don't. Mm-hmm. I never ordered, I don't think, anything. Yeah. Well, I got some of those old Ronco records. Like,
what?
From Ronco.
Tell us from him?
Some of them were. Those top 40 records where you could get all your favorite hits on one record.
Huh. You just invested in them and...
I guess. I don't know how they got all the licensing stuff. Yeah.
Huh.
Or Pocket Fisherman. Was that a Ronco?
That might have been.
Pocket Fisherman.
Yeah. He did a lot, you know.
And, anything you could think of.
He was overshadowed by Billy Mays for a while, wasn't he?
Yeah, until he died.
Yeah. From coke failure.
Yeah, he didn't have enough. He didn't have enough to keep him going.
Dude, I was watching Adult Swim last night, and I noticed they got Brack back.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I haven't got to check it out. Or
I saw one. It was hilarious. It was the episode where... he put on a play.
Oh.
Yeah, he put on a community play because he needed $20 to order. He was watching a show with his dad. And at the end, the main character is like, I'm trapped in this block of ice. What I need all my fans to do that are watching is order this ice untrapper or this ice melter for $19.95. And it shows it's a Bic lighter. And he's like, I need a bunch of people to order it today. And so he needed the $20, and so he put on a show and charged admission, and the whole, even the neighbor robot was on there. And he's like, I'm the only one that can improvise. And he blew away one of the characters with his rocket off his arms.
I'm going to definitely have to check out some Brack.
Dude, it was funny. The Cyclohoma was the name of the play that they put on.
So is that on Netflix? Is there Brack on Netflix, or it's just
there might
on
be.
Adult Swim?
No, on YouTube, I know you can watch episodes.
I've been watching a lot of Netflix lately. Probably too much, but did we talk about the movie Running Man before?
No. With Sylvester Stallone?
No. The other one, Arnold. Arnold Schwarzenegger. But it was a Stephen King. Well, it was a Richard Bachman.
Oh, that was okay. Yeah, but I okay.
Did you ever watch that show?
I've seen bits and pieces.
Now I saw bits and pieces and pizzas. I saw bits of pizzas and bits and pieces. But I watched this show recently. Actually, I think I watched it on YouTube because it got full movies on YouTube, and I can watch YouTube through my TV, through my Wii. But dude, it blew me away. Running Man never says Stephen King anywhere. It says based on a novel written by Richard Bachman. Directed by fucking Starsky.
Really?
What's his name? It's got three names. That guy that played Starsky from Starsky and Hutch. Paul Michael Glaser. I didn't even know he was a director. Now check out some of the people in this movie. Dweezil Zappa, Mick Fleetwood, Jesse Ventura, and the game show host of The Running Man was Richard Dawson.
Nice. I think I've seen enough bits to where, you know, I put together the whole plot of the story.
So the year
and
was...
I like the...
And Maria Conchita Alonso, too.
Yeah, I would watch it.
I watched it, and I watched it all the way through.
It's based on a very short story, though, isn't it? Like, it was a collection of, like, three stories by Richard Bachman.
Yeah, I'll have to look into that. I'm not too sure if it was a short story or not. But it was based in the year 2017.
Oh, it's coming up.
Yep, that's going to be the day where everything is controlled by the government. Everything is at a police state. You have a curfew.
And that's what we're upon.
Exactly. Arnold Schwarzenegger, they're telling him he's flying in as a fighter pilot. And they're saying,
"But
bomb all those people, shoot him." He's like, "There's innocent civilians down there. I refuse to shoot them. Unarmed people." And they're like, "Shoot him." And then he shoots all of his people so he doesn't have to shoot the innocent people. And then they change the story and put it out in the public that he shot all these innocent people and they put him in prison, and then he breaks out, and then they capture him, and then they put him... Richard Dawson can get anybody he wants.
So in the future, is he like, when he's a contestant on there, is he a former governor?
No, but he cannot even speak as well as he does now. I believe it was in California.
They should reboot the movie. You should write a script to come out in 2017... That is The Running Man, based in like where the world is, really.
And it'll be in present day time.
Yeah.
The year is 2017. Mm-hmm. A police state is upon us. And
you can still have Richard Dawson host it.
Is he still alive?
I don't think so.
No. We could get a hologram Richard Dawson.
There was someone I saw the other day, and I was like, holy shit, they're still alive? Bob Newhart is going to be on... some Big Bang Theory, I think it is.
I would change it.
I thought it was... I looked, I was like, it's got to be a hologram, because he's not still alive, is he?
And then you Googled it?
No, I didn't.
Oh, but it was really him? He's still alive?
I guess so. I thought he died a while back.
I thought he did, too. I didn't remember hearing that he died, but it was just one of those things that he's old.
We talked about Tom Poston, right? I remember that.
Tom Poston was...
George.
George.
Handyman George on the Newhart show.
Oh, yeah, but he was...
Newhart.
I don't know if you remember this, but he was on Mork and Mindy quite a bit.
I don't. Tom I remember Poston. Watching the show. I don't remember a lot about the show.
I've been Jonathan catching Winters some funny. Reruns of Mork and Mindy on I don't know what it is.
One of those stations. There's a
TV
few of those
Land.
Stations. Yeah,
TV Land, I think it is.
Now, I want to go back to Starsky and Hutch real quick, if that's all right.
Yeah, totally.
You remember that character on there, Bear? Fuzzy Bear?
Shaggy Bear.
Is that what his name was?
I think so.
Sugar Bear?
Sugar Bear. Yeah, or I don't know, but Snoop Lion played him in the reboot with Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson. Did you ever watch that, Starsky and Hutch?
No, I didn't.
I think it was Sugar Bear? Shaggy Bear? Anywhere, yeah.
Fozzie?
No, that was the Muppets.
Okay. But anyway, his son played running back with the Raiders for like 8 years.
The guy who played?
Huggy Bear.
Huggy. We're Shuggy, Shugga.
Huggy Bear. Yeah, his son played for the Raiders for like 8 years running back.
Nice.
Yeah.
Snoop Lion played Huggy Bear.
Yeah, which is near Oakland, right? It all took place near...
Starsky and Hutch?
Yeah.
I think so, yeah. California, definitely.
And so it was very prideful for Raider Nation to have him...
Starsky, or Hutch's son.
Yeah.
Huggy Bear, that's right.
Yeah,
okay.
Huggy Bear's Fargus. Justin Fargus was his name.
Wow, I never even knew about that dude.
Yeah, the Raiders picked up 14 guys that were undrafted. They've just added like 20 new guys to their roster.
Well, maybe that'll help them shape up.
Maybe. Maybe.
Maybe not, though.
You never know.
I think they like to be the underdogs. Just to see if their nation will fucking stick with them.
Oh, their nation will never die.
Well, I think they just try to test that by playing shitty sometimes.
They don't need to, though. I mean, you see other, like, Patriots fans, they'll jump off anywhere.
Yeah.
Ooh. We just lost Boston, I think.
Lost Boston.
Lost Boston.
To what?
My comments. Boston's a diehard sports town. There I am putting them down.
Sportsaredumb.com, Boston.
Did you check out the 76th Street podcast?
I did not yet. I'll be honest.
I checked out one of their episodes the other day. I was wondering if they'd had one in a while because it said about 3 weeks ago, I think, was April 10th.
Huh.
And, you know, I'm going to be honest here.
Do it.
It started off a little bit slow, probably like some of ours might.
Yeah.
And then I fast forward about into 15 minutes, and I was getting some really good chuckles. They were talking about some random stuff, funky stuff.
Right on.
They were, you know, making fun of each other.
Cool.
So, yeah, definitely worth checking out, 76th Street Pod. Thanks for the...
package.
Stickers.
Yeah, and I've been trying to think of a subject because Seth asked me to go on... his newest podcast. I don't know if it's the newest one because he's got a few out now, but it's called One to Whatever is the name of the podcast.
It's about pop culture and how it affects our lives.
Yeah, so you just choose something that's pop culture. Tell him if he isn't familiar with it, he will consume that. And he said, you know, if it's a movie, I can take care of that in like a day. If it's a book or something like that or a series, like a whole season of a series of a show or something, obviously it'd take a couple months for him to do that. But I'm trying to think of something, whether it should be a music record or maybe one of my favorite movies.
Hmm.
And we'll talk about that. But I also showed interest to him on going on his other one, Go Regrets, when I was telling you about where you say your first regret that you ever remember having in your life, and then your biggest regret ever and your most recent regret.
See, that I would have to sit down. It would take me months to probably...
You have that many regrets?
No, but to probably think of one.
Yeah.
You know?
I sat down for, it probably took me 20 minutes, and I think I got it narrowed down.
I don't do good at, like, scraping my memory for things.
Like, I was just trying to think of, like, when I was, you know, old enough to know what regret is and actually feel a remorse for feeling or I don't know if remorse is the same as regret. It's pretty close, I think. But, yeah, it's something that you do that you wish you didn't do, right? I regretted doing that.
Yeah.
I kind of wish I could have gone back and not. I would have done it different because I regretted it. Yeah, I had a few of those things as a child, you know, because you do some stupid things as you're growing up. And, make some unfortunate decisions, and then you think, well, maybe it's because of your lack
bad
of experience.
Bad decisions. That's what this podcast is all about, bad decisions.
Yeah, and how you wished you wouldn't have made them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so if you guys are into a little more honest and spiritual and emotional podcast that rather than just laughing at our fucking stupid shit jokes.
Well, just go over and check out all their podcasts over at thetangentaudionetwork.com, right?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
You know, they got like five or six shows. Yeah.
And they're kind of maxed out right now because they've taken a big workload upon themselves.
Oh, for sure, man.
And then, so they're looking.
I have too.
Yeah, they're looking for an intern or something to come in and help them. For free, because they're probably paying money to do this just like we do.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I recently took on a few other adventures. One of them managing Mike Lee Beats.
Oh, yeah. I heard about that. I overheard my wife and him talking about making a trip to Portland for something or another, but I'm not sure what it was.
There was a rapper... and his agent are really excited, really like his style, Mike's style, and are going to fly down to Portland. I don't know exactly where they're from. They're going to shoot a rap video, and they'd like Mike to be in it.
Sweet.
And
that's
so,
excellent.
Yeah, yeah. Wanted me to go up there with them and, I don't know, stand as a manager, make sure he gets his M&Ms in dressing room.
Exactly. Green only, please.
Yep, and that's cool.
Yeah.
Sold a few beats the other day. And I also, anybody wanting to check any of those out, MikeLeeBeats.com, you can go there. You can just, you know, they're all right there.
Yep. He just ordered some studio monitors.
He's right on.
He'll hope he's got a guarantee in case they're not up to snuff or whatever, but
yeah.
They're pretty expensive. I mean, those ones weren't. He got some inexpensive ones, but I can't remember the brand, but they should be good. Just a little bookshelf studio monitors. Mm-hmm. I think they got 5-inch woofer.
Very, like, tuned in.
I was
for
like, 5-inch
reference.
Woofer? I go, is that really considered a woofer if it's only 5 inches? That's like a tweeter, brother.
That is true, huh?
But I don't know.
There was, we started the dudeschillin.com, the 24-hour-a-day comedy radio station.
And that's kind of like a network.
Yeah, and that's just 24-hours-a-day comedy. You can go on there and check out some of the programming. A lot of it's just us for right now, but there's some Seth Milstein and the podcast cast, and we're looking to do probably like 1 to 2 hour blocks of various people's shows, podcasts, or maybe even just some little small comedy bits.
Yeah, and I never heard back. We were going to, like, offer our services or whatever you want to call it to the Big and Loud podcast, which is a favorite of mine, but Don never really got back to me on that issue in the message.
Maybe a check with Vowel Movements.
Yeah, I don't think they've done a new episode, but we could run reruns.
Looking, if you send us, like, 10 episodes, we'll just run a random one every night.
Yeah, I'm sure they'd be into that.
Yeah.
I know Bobby's getting ready to have a baby.
Oh, congratulations.
So he's probably busy with that. But, man, those guys just moved their podcast studio down to an actual studio in Sacramento from it used to be two guys in a room at their house.
Two guys, one room.
Yeah. Coming to you live from a room in a house. But so, yeah, once they got moved, they did one episode. They had some technical difficulties. They lost the first 20 minutes of their show, and then they had to redo it because they weren't saving because they were in a new area, and they were kind of out of sorts. And I don't know if that was a hindrance to them to not do more, but I've been bugging them. They put a thing on their website in, like, January that said Vowel Movement shirts. And I said, I ain't ordering one until we get a new episode, and I got nothing.
And no new episode, right?
No new episode and no response from Bobby. I know you're busy, Bobby. Ricky,
you know,
Bobby.
I posted five. I just want to know what this means. You know, MCPTP?
Yeah.
He likes to like statuses.
Oh, yeah. He loves to like
I've made five posts yesterday pretty quickly and within an hour and a half, and he only liked one of them. What's that mean?
Maybe he wasn't by his computer. Maybe he didn't.
He just caught the one.
I think he just likes stuff that's in his news feed.
Oh.
If he misses a post, I don't think he'll go stalk your page and like.
Wait a minute.
I don't think
is that an effective publicity tool? Because then anybody that's on that sees that you like that, they could click your name right there. They could like you, and then they could be.
Maybe that's why. Like, who liked this? Ooh, PTP.
Yeah.
I like him.
Patrick Tom Perkins. That guy sounds like he's interesting.
Yeah, he's got three names.
And I see him on every status. He likes it.
Yeah, he must be friends with everybody. Hey, if you get a chance, Pat, go down to the TagCast podcast Facebook and throw us a like.
Yeah. Future guest as well, right?
Yeah.
On our road trip on June 23rd.
Yes, Sunday, June 23rd. And we have four confirmations, which will be enough if we don't get our fifth. I did reach out to another Portland comic who is getting ready to go on the road, and she may or may not be back at the time, but it would be great to have her on the show. I ain't even going to mention her name until we find out yes or no. But
if anybody knows from Portland, any Portland, like if there's like a cheap conference room to maybe rent for a day or something like that, that would be cheaper than a motel.
Yeah.
maybe send us a message or something.
We're not going to be doing any fucking in it.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, something
weird
happens.
I know they probably don't. You know, they have a maid service, you know, at 9, so they I don't know if they'd want to re-rent the motel that night, but I'm sure they could rent a motel at 9 p.m. They could get find some, they could flip the vacancy sign on. Somebody that just wants to come in, crash, and they're, you know,
and
with the lights
early.
On.
Yeah.
Because if we get one on 82nd, I mean, we're turning the lights on to keep the roaches underneath the fridge.
Right, right, yeah. But yeah, conference room may be better, or like, I don't even know how much, I have no idea how much those cost.
Like the back of a Chinese restaurant that nobody goes into, maybe, or something, you know?
Or a pizza place that has a back room that's not full.
Because there is probably plenty of restaurants that just don't have any customers all day.
Yeah, because there's so many restaurants. So it's like, how could everybody have customers at all
times? Or they serve a dog, and it's well known.
Yeah.
Or maybe some people like it.
Deer, I don't know. We better get to this before.
A lot of Chinese places just do delivery.
Yeah. I saw a clip of a live Black Sabbath doing the new song, another new song, and Ozzy was singing really bad. Like worse than me and Jerry right there. Actually, Carl had posted it. It's like, can he not hear his monitors? Because Ozzy's sounding really bad. He said that he sounded like an American Idol reject. Whoa. Sharon, why is he saying that about me?
Well, I saw one metal magazine the other day post, check out this new Black Sabbath song, I can't wait for the album. And then you go, I clicked on the YouTube thing, and the first comment on there was from the person who uploaded it and said, this is not Black Sabbath, this is me making a song that kind of sounds like Black Sabbath.
Oh.
But I just waited to fuck with people. Because the old metal magazine, apparently not even reading one comment.
Weird.
It's funny. But it wasn't a bad song. The guy should have just posted it as his own song. It had a good feel.
Yep, so we're getting a little bit back to our normal here. He was listening to Robert Fripp on Monday and Suffocation on Wednesday. Today, he's going punk rock on our arses, and he's listening to some Poison Idea.
Ooh.
War All the Time. I believe that's from the 80s.
I was going to guess, you said punk rock. I was going to guess Pennywise.
Ah, man, I don't know if he's ever... You ever heard of Pennywise?
Actually, I was going to say Social Hunt? Distortion, but I kind of like those guys.
Lagwagon. Or,
I don't know if I'd consider them punk. They're punk-based rock.
And then he said, rock on, you slugs of luckiness.
What about...
Slugs of Luckiness. That's what he called us. That's
nice.
A band. Is that a band name now? Slugs of Luckiness.
Yeah. Yeah. There was a... Oh, I just lost my thought.
Damn it.
What were you talking
slugs.
About just a second ago?
Talking about punk, Pennywise, and Lagwagon, and...
Oh.
Punk bands, and you said Pennywise, then I said, has Hans ever heard of Pennywise, and then you lost your thought.
I lost my thought.
That's all right. And this is just weird.
Oh, I was going to go Husker Du. What's Hans know of Husker Du?
I bet he probably doesn't like Bob Mould.
Really? Probably. I bought a Sugar album once, and that was Bob Mould.
Yeah.
Afterwards, it was called File This Under Easy Listening. It was filed under Easy Listening, and it was Easy Listening.
My friend Bobby Jordan, a big fan of Bob Mould and Husker Du.
Oh, well, maybe I should be asking Bobby.
Yeah, I don't know.
Bobby, give me some news on some Husker Du.
Is it Husker?
What's the big Husker deal?
Dave Grohl, big fan of Husker Du.
Really?
Yeah.
It's Minnesota rock, right?
Yeah.
It's like...
Sugar.
When people talk about Minnesota-based rock and roll, they go Husker.
Corn Husker Du.
Yep.
Yeah, there was this was just reminded me, but before I forget, this is weird because Jeff Hanneman just died yesterday, and just yesterday, before I heard the news, I had South of Heaven in my CD player.
That South of Heaven.
Yep, because I got my amp and my sub hooked up in my little car now, so it's like a rockin' stereo in a tiny little box, so it's pretty cool. But, okay, there's that, and then I was going to move on to
something
else.
What's the top three tracks on South of Heaven?
Ooh, I really like Live Undead, which is another album's title, but that's the name of a song on there. I really like, even though it's more not as fast or crazy, I really like the last song on side one. It goes, I can hear it, but I can't think of it. that one, you know?
Uh-huh.
It's called Fuck Me. Anyway, it's called Fuck Me. I'd say Silent Scream, Live Undead, and that one song that I can't think of right now. It's called Mandatory Suicide.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Great album, though. Great production. I love the sound of the drums and just...
What was that album they did of covers?
It's called... Oh, you're testing my brain again, aren't you? Undisputed Attitude.
Oh, nice, nice. What were a couple great covers on that one?
I liked Richard Hung Himself.
Oh, from D.I.
Yeah.
Dude, that was a classic from the movie Suburbia.
Uh-huh.
A live performance from D.I. in that movie, I do believe.
Doing that song, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was wrapping the quarter in his neck. Ah!
Richard Hung Himself.
Yeah.
Richard Strung Himself. And they did Violent Pacification by DRI. Stick an R there in the middle of the DI, and you got DRI. What else? They did some Minor Threat, Guilty of Being White, I think. They did a couple songs that Jeff Hanneman, rest in peace, wrote himself for a side punk project that he was doing that never came to fruition. I can't remember the name of it, but I think one song was called Damn, and it had two D's. Like the damn,
like the dame drops,
or like, like goddamn without the G-O on it.
Was oh crap! I just lost another thought.
I lost one a minute ago too. So I wish we could record our lost thoughts, and then we'd have an episode of lost thoughts.
Dude, that would be cool.
How could we ever remember them though?
I don't know.
And now, lost thoughts with Tergachi.
Bits and pizzas.
Yeah. I got bits and pieces of pizza in my bitch.
Yeah?
Oh, that's what I was going to say. You were talking about Minnesota, remember?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I did a comedy show down there at Sam Bond's Garage, and there was a lady from Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
And she recently moved to Eugene, and she talked like that through her whole set. I don't know if she was doing it on purpose to be funny, but just her talking like that made people laugh. You know.
Mm-hmm.
She sounded like Frances McDormand from Fargo. She was all right, though, but it was a fun comedy show, and they did a bunch of improv. Well, about 15 minutes of it. They have a little unnamed improv group of about six people.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I'm a big fan of improv. It was kind of funny, but sometimes it's more fun for them, but not as funny to the audience.
Sure. Yeah.
They're calling out, give us something, an action that you do.
Yeah. I think improv comedy is probably its own event. You know, you have to go with people that are know what they're getting into when you see improv, because it's a very dry kind of atmosphere when you're watching an event like that. It's not for all audiences.
Yeah, one of them was give us a subject that we would come across in the middle of the floor of this bar that would be unexpected, and someone said a dead body. So then each person from the improv group would come up and pretend like they came across a dead body and have to act out what they do with it.
Mm-hmm.
One of them went down and started doing CPR. And then another one, like...
So almost doing more like a dramatic...
Yeah. And then one of them grabbed his wallet and took all of his money
mm-hmm.
and threw it back down. Other guy, like, propped him up and then started dancing with him.
But it was all just an invisible person, right?
Yeah. So it was like after the fifth person went, you'd probably rent out a lot of the most common thought of ideas. But I don't know. It was fun. And that was the other funny thing I was in cock about. Okay, a year or so ago, I think he had left before we started podcasting. We had a little dude with us named Justin, who was a foster kid of ours for about 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
His mom went to rehab and he needed some help, so we had him in the house, and his caseworker was at this comedy show at that Sam Bond's Garage in Eugene.
Oh, okay.
And so we walked in, and my wife's with me, and she's like, oh, Dottie, how are you? And she's like, hi. And then I was like, who's that? And she's like, that's Justin's caseworker from when we had Justin. I was like, oh. She's like, oh. She's like, what are you doing in your set? I was like, I'm not changing my set because of anybody that's in this audience. I go, because I've made a vow to myself and to my fans and the people who don't like me that I'm going to be myself on stage. I'm going to be myself off stage. I'm not going to try to write jokes that aren't my style just to get a laugh. I'm going to be myself and I'm going to do my shit. So I said, here's what I'm doing. And I'm doing the part about my neighbor's house getting broken into and then feeling guilty about it and then saying, no, I didn't break into my house. I had my kids do it, because kids these days will do anything for a dub sack. And then people are like, oh, dub sack. And then I talk about a dime bag being half of a dub sack. And I talked about weed not being legal and how I'd been smoking since I was a small child. And and she sat with my wife, and she was like, she acted uncomfortable. I go, we don't have any kids from the state anymore right now, so it shouldn't. She goes, no, she laughed. She laughed, and she didn't say anything. She goes, I just kind of felt weird at first because I knew what you were going to say, and she was a caseworker.
She's a human.
Yeah, she was at a bar.
Yeah.
Watching comedy, which it was a clean comedy show. A couple people said shit and fuck a couple times, and I get offended.
Those motherfuckers.
I know. It's like, fucking fags.
Did I mention that sickdaddyradio.com is up and running as a full-fledged station now, 24/7?
I don't think you did yet
roll,
today. Maybe
hard rock.
Maybe the other day you might have, but you've got a new program.
Two radio stations going 24 hours. It would take you 48 hours a day to listen to both.
That's right. And you got a full-fledged program director slash DJ there?
Yeah, Jared Nelson really helping out, grabbing a few sponsors, really reaching out to bands from all over the world, getting tracks collected, doing getting some good bands going on for the making like a spotlight band for each little episode that will run at 7 p.m. every night.
Is this all local bands or just unsigned bands?
Unsigned bands, but there's a lot of local too, you know.
But there are some bands that aren't from Oregon.
Yeah, for sure. There's bands from the UK.
Oh.
And my landlord just pulled up and was collecting rent from...
Do you want to
the old
little...
neighbor, and then, no, I already paid my rent.
Okay.
I shouldn't be coming over here.
Yeah, well, we're about done anyway, so you might be able to edit this little jibber.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I like editing.
Oh, we're fine.
I do like editing.
We're fine.
Yeah. I've been doing a lot of editing lately, you know?
Yeah.
I was trying to maybe collect, I uploaded all of our stuff to the Dudes Chillin' Radio, and there's a 5-gig limit for the pricing tier or whatever. And it was actually just over the 5 gigs, just all of our TagCast and ZappaCasts. So I took out like the first season of the TagCast and chose, you know, I thought maybe we'd find like 10 episodes in there. We can make classic episodes, maybe take the plugs out of them.
Yeah.
You know, no reason to
plug old shit
from last year. So I've been doing a little bit of that in the mixing area, and you know, like I said, you got the 7 p.m. Sick Daddy comes on the Sick Daddy radio show with Jared Nelson. Probably be 3 shows a month. We're giving away Nuclear Salt tickets at the Hawthorne. They're playing on May 26th.
And don't get those guys confused with Nuclear Assault.
Yeah.
Who is a broken-up band that used to be out of New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, Nuclear Salt from Salem, Oregon, which they recently played with Crimson Guardian, I think, down in Medford or somewhere.
They're pretty good. I enjoyed the tunes.
And they Crimson Guardian actually opened for a band down there called, I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but it's L-I-C-H King Lick.
Oh, Lich.
Yeah.
Lich or Lick.
Licking? Maybe they're called Licking.
Maybe.
Light King. Anyway, Dave Forsythe from Reno. Hey, buddy, how you doing? He gave me a big stack of promotional little postcard things of that band.
Uh-huh.
And they got 4 or 5 albums out, and I don't know if they're from Reno or if they just come through there a lot, but he's a big fan of theirs and loves those guys. And then I saw that Crimson Guardian was opening for them in Medford. It didn't look like a huge turnout from the pictures I saw.
Uh-huh.
Jeremy Rowe was moshing by himself.
Right on. Yeah.
So...
there was a band, can't remember what they're called now, that Jared brought in, the Peabodys. You hear of those guys before?
No, I've heard that name.
They have a song called "I Want to Go Parking with You, but I Don't Have a Car."
That's good.
Kind of like a punk song, and he's brought in some like old school kind of style punk of like underground bands and stuff. You know, Jared's got a really good taste in. And hard rock and punk and
wide variety
and
too.
Yeah, and so I enjoy listening to it just to hear what he's brought in because it's a lot of good songs.
Yeah, I heard he's going to be playing some of Jason Moser's music with his newest band, Splintered Throne, uh-huh. and some old school Insanity. Which
yep,
is cool.
Insanity coming up. Yeah. Maybe even people listening tonight might even get the Insanity in their ears.
You just might go crazy.
You might get a couple classic old Void songs from before
the demo.
Before the back in the Violent Order days.
Oh yeah, Violent Order of Idiotic Dudes for sure. But yeah, don't be confused by the Insanity. Literally, that's a band that was from Lebanon, Oregon. I know there's another band, I believe it was from California, that had some moderate success in the 80s. Napalm Death actually covered an Insanity song, different Insanity. So yeah. So don't get your metal confused. But
local old school.
Yeah, yeah, we kind of
plays some Boris Dahl's Fall. And he thought it was pronounced Forestrials.
Ah.
And so I had to kind of go back in my own head and kind of think.
That's Forestalls. My friend from the tape knows
his name, right?
He was just reading a story about the guy Forestall and his fall. It's a famous story.
Yeah.
And I don't know the specifics of it, but like he was like,
I think I've read it before
too. He's like, that's where they had to have got their name from. And I was like, yeah, I remember it was a historical story that they got their name from. Because mm-hmm. John used to hang out with Zach Rowe and Mike Westby and those guys back mm-hmm. in the day. And they recently saw each other for the first time over at my house a couple weeks ago. And it was like, whoa, wow. I haven't seen him for such a long time. And then he got to talking about Forestall's Fall and Hand and all the old Zach Rowe projects, which, mm-hmm. by the way, those guys got some shows coming up. They're doing a Battle of the Bands again this year to try to get on the Warped Tour for regional slot. I think that's at Hawthorne Theater. I don't think it's on this week's plugs, but it'll be on next week's. But, and they're also playing in Corvallis soon, so check out those dudes.
For sure.
And I think that's about, we're over. We're done. We want you guys to go to our website. If you're not already there listening, go to tagcastpodcast.com, click on the Amazon link, and go do some shopping.
Mm-hmm.
You got to buy something for somebody coming up soon, I'm sure.
And I want someone to put on a show with Yob, Witch Mountain, Norska, and Helms Ali and some other bands, because that would be a fucking badass show.
Yeah, that would. You should put that show on, whoever's listening.
Yeah.
Or someone should put on a show with Witch Mountain, Norska, Yob, and Griefhammer.
Well, yeah, you could put Griefhammer on that list. And you could also put...
I thought we were kind of talking about something up in the future there.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Well, that's...
A secret. Now the secret's kind of out, but it's not because you don't know any details
Helms
about
Lee's
it.
Pretty...
but they're, I think they're
I
from
like
Seattle.
Too.
I think they're from Seattle. We'll get them down here.
Yeah.
We'll get them down here.
And, maybe some nether regions. Those guys are pretty cool, too.
Yeah. Joseph Wickstrom.
Yeah.
Still
they've
saying,
been in the studio.
I saw some pictures. He still says he wants to do comedy at one point, and we got the Helium Comedy Contest this year is coming up. Sometime this month. I'm going to pay my dues tomorrow. And, I already signed up. I just haven't paid my registration fee. And then they
for
were
what?
For the Helium Comedy Contest this year. So they're going to give me a date, which is probably going to be late May.
I'm going to pay, too.
And then not go?
Yeah.
You should just go this time. And just tell one joke and walk
last
off.
Last time I didn't even prepare, though, dude.
I know.
I had
did.
Time.
You didn't even go.
Yeah.
And, oh, well.
Yeah, maybe we can work in, we considered asking Joe if he'd like to be on the TagCast when we go up on our road trip.
Yeah, that's a possibility. Maybe he could come down if he's not,
Yeah.
I don't know what he does on Sundays, but we'll find out.
Yeah, we could schedule him after church.
First Church of Satan. Hey, thanks for listening on this Friday. You guys go out and do some fun stuff this weekend. It's the first weekend in May, and it's fucking sunny outside. Weather's been great, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has been nice.
Loving it.
I've been opening up the windows and letting the breeze in.
We went to the park with our godson and played around and climbed up some stuff and did a lot of fun stuff
this week. A little marshmallow toasting.
Yeah, last night. Actually, night before last, if I may correct myself. Yeah, we started up the old bonfire in the backyard and roasted some marshmallows and made some s'mores. Tonight we might even have some more. Okay, tune in on Monday. There goes Lance Steele, the neighbor.
Rock on.
Hi, Lance.
Get that mail.
You should grab a female while you're over there, too.
Mail.
Rock on and... Oh, you already said that.
This episode dedicated to Jeff Hanneman.
Oh.